Tom.
Indeed.
Trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends Variety Hour, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios on the corner of Trashview and Nada Vista. Please put on your 3D glasses now. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This keeps your brain at a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. And it's working. I can feel it. Can you feel it, John and Jeremy?
Pretty good. I can feel pretty good, man.
Yeah, something's happening over here. I don't know. We'll roll with it.
And as always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. To learn more, go to BIPCOT.org. All right. And we're back. Well, I'm back. I've been gone for about a month now. John and Jeremy.
Yay, Shane's returned.
John and Jeremy have been holding it down on Sunday night, Monday mornings. But it's good to be back. Hopefully I can continue to do this with my crazy schedule. Work's been nuts lately.
Yeah, had those long hours. I mean, I did them for years, but not... I don't think I ever, I mean, I've done physical labor. I've done ridiculously long hours. Luckily for me, in all of my years, I've managed to not have to combine the two too many times. A lot of, you know, most of the jobs that I've had to work really long hours on did not involve too much physical labor. And I kind of just got to hang out and do stuff, you know, like the last dozen years where the most physical thing I was doing was walking.
Yeah, I had this truck driving job where I had to, like, unlift these heavy audio and lighting equipment, and I would pull serious hours on that job. One time I pulled a 24-hour day. So, but that was the only job I ever that ever required any manual labor, because I can't handle that kind of stuff.
I'm not opposed.
You could tell looking at me.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, I'm not like opposed to the manual labor thing. And like I said, I've done it. I've just managed to not have to mix the two. Like most of my manual labor jobs, it was like, you know, most you would put in is an 8-hour day and that's it. And even then you were like only going hard for like maybe six of those. So it wasn't like, it wasn't doing like killer, you know, what are you doing, Shane? Like 12-hour shifts or longer?
Well, it's about 6 10-hour days, but Mondays tend to be busier than usual, and so Mondays can be 12 or 13,
gotcha.
Which is not the easiest thing to do, especially after, you know, doing the show and getting maybe 4 hours of sleep and then doing like a 12-hour day. It's pretty rough. I come home and I just crash.
Well, that's why you need to train yourself to get in the habit of napping then, if you want to keep coming and hanging out with us on Sunday night, Shane. It's the only way, man. I resisted it for a long time when I first started because I was just petrified that I was going to sleep through a show. And then, of course, the first time I tried it, I did sleep through a show. And then I was afraid.
I remember that.
I was afraid to nap again for months after that. And then I finally realized, well, if I want to be a functional human being on Mondays, which is already hard enough as it is, because I'm one of those people that I've always hated, you know, I've always hated Mondays.
I have since I've been in school.
Yeah, but even when I was working like 7 hours, you know, I was working 7 days a week for the most part through the good portion of when I ran my company, and even then I still managed to hate Mondays, even though that wasn't really effectively a Monday anymore for me because it was just like another day. I still managed to hate them because bad things always just like managed to find me on Mondays, and you know, usually a number of them before noon. Although the advantage of doing the Fiends now on Mondays and having my altered schedule is I usually don't have to get up too long before noon, so I can manage to avoid most of those mishaps. Although most times I manage to cram them all in by 3 at that rate, so you know, whatever.
When I was throwing the raves, I came to hate Fridays because that's when I had to go to work.
Well, yeah, that's what I said. Even when it wasn't like my traditional start of the week, I still managed to hate them. It was always a day.
Yeah, yep.
Hating exactly. Mondays is pretty common for most people.
Yeah, but,
napping. As far as napping goes, that has become my new favorite hobby. I will take advantage of any kind of nap time whenever I get the chance.
Yeah, me too.
For me, it usually comes involuntarily.
Yeah,
I have a lot of that too. Like, I come home from work and I'm like, all right, I'm going to take a shower and make dinner. And no, I end up napping.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I used to make fun of my dad all the time because he would, you know, once he passed like 40, I guess, he would have this amazing ability to just like sit down and like watch, like as like we were watching TV or whatever. Or whatever we were doing, he would just like sit down on the couch and like half join us, and like the next thing you know, he's just like out cold sitting there. And yeah. You know, everybody always used to joke about it and stuff. And apparently, my grandfather used to do the same thing. And now, sure enough, as I got closer and closer to 40, I started doing it too. And it drives Jen nuts because like she knows it. Like I apparently set myself up for it without even realizing it half the time, especially in the colder months when I'm constantly wearing a hoodie, because when I sit down on the couch, I'll like instinctively pull the hood up over my head and I'll sit there like I'm not like it's trying to get into a sleeping position or anything. I'll just sit there with my legs stretched out a little bit, my arms folded, and you know, next thing I know, if my kids don't say anything to me, or basically nobody bothers me for like 5 minutes, I'm like out. And I'll wake up anywhere from like 20 minutes to an hour later if nobody disturbs me.
And I'm like, I used to be really jealous of those people who could fall asleep really quickly, and now I've kind of become one of those people. If I sit down for more than 15, 20 minutes, there's a good chance I could fall asleep.
Well, I've always been one of those people. I've always been able to fall asleep not only quickly, but I could also fall asleep pretty much anywhere at any time. But this is like a new phenomenon as I've gotten older, like the sitting on the couch thing. This didn't used to happen. But I mean, I've fallen asleep standing up before. I've fallen asleep in the shower. You know,
I've always envied that.
Yeah, I've always joked that I was like a borderline narcoleptic because
my dad literally was one.
Oh yeah,
yeah. He used to. I mean, he probably fell asleep at the wheel dozens of different times and wrecked so many cars.
Oh wow! See, and here I was going to ask if you ever face planted in his food, and you just went up, you just took that up a whole another notch right there. Wow.
Oh man, one time.
Are they not supposed to drive like legal, like, you know, whatever, for whatever legal means? Aren't narcoleptics not supposed to drive?
I'm pretty sure he's like constantly fighting for his license, and I don't think he has one anymore. But one time he almost made it home, and he drove through some neighbor's front lawn and hit a tree in their front lawn, which luckily stopped him from going through the house.
But I'm guessing he never managed to hurt anybody though.
I think he heard a dude on a bike one time.
Wow. Yeah. That's...
Yeah. I don't even know if I should be talking about this. Wow. He doesn't listen anyway.
I was going to say, statute of limitations, is it over? Oh, yeah, it's good. Let's just go for the rest.
Oh, it's way over.
Yeah, these things happen. No, but yeah, like I said, yeah, well, like, you know, I don't really care for the law too much, but there is a reason.
They had him on,
supposed to be on the road.
They had him on all that kind of, you know, big pharma speed and stuff for a while, whether it was like Ritalin or Adderall. They tried to put him on all different types of stuff, which I never knew they gave you that stuff for narcolepsy, but they definitely do. And it's the same stuff they give kids for ADD, which I'm skeptical about that whole diagnosis, but that's a whole other topic.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that's that. I mean, like I said, I joke that I am one. I've never actually known one, known anybody who is, though. Although I've seen that can happen, and that's just, you know, I can imagine it's got to be frustrating too, because it's not like there's pretty much nothing you can really do about it. You know, it's not like, you know, especially in most of those situations, it's not like you want to go to sleep. You're like, you really want to make it to wherever you're going, and it just
exactly.
It's completely out of your control, and just that's got to be rough. I can't even imagine. I almost feel bad joking about the fact that I'm a narcoleptic all these years. Almost.
Well, I mean, I'm joking about the same thing because it's just one of those things you get used to over the years. I mean, I wonder, like, now that I kind of don't have cancer anymore, does that mean I'm not allowed to joke about it anymore? Because I've been joking about it for like two years.
I'm pretty sure the rule is, especially you're allowed to joke about it, especially if you've quote unquote survived it. You know, absolutely. that's supposed to give you like carte blanche, right? I think you're allowed to joke about it indefinitely. I think that's how it works.
Well, there we go. Because I was wondering that, because I've definitely been making jokes like the past 2 years or so that I probably wouldn't have gotten away with before I had. I probably wouldn't have even felt comfortable making them jokes before, but just dealing with the reality of the situation has kind of like made me, it's forced me to bring humor to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'd say as a survivor, you've earned the right to joke about it.
And I mean, really, everybody else has too, but...
Yeah, but no, I, you know, in that context, yeah, I get that, you know, my... I guess, well, yeah, I guess she is technically my aunt now because they finally got married. But my my uncle's wife, you know, she's kind of the same way. She makes a lot of jokes about it and stuff because she survived it. You know, she survived breast cancer. And it's kind of one of those things. It's just like, you know, well, you now get to say F you when you're in that position, right? So, or Feinstein you, I guess we'd say around here.
Exactly.
And so, yeah, man, definitely take advantage of that situation, you know. I often wish that some horrible thing would befall me so I could take advantage of that and be able to make jokes with
Yeah, it's like those things where you know, certain you get to hide behind certain disadvantages or whatever, you know. I'm not sure what the SJWs would call it, but the opposite of privilege, whatever the opposite of privilege is.
Well, I know what they'd call what we're doing right now, and that'd be like microaggressing. So,
yeah,
all these horrible things we're saying. But yeah, it's like, you know, it's like Michael when he got his 23andMe or whichever service he actually used. I forget. I think that's the one he used when he got those results back. And, you know, he was able to make all the black jokes now because he found out that he was, you know, part black. So that gave him, you know, that gave him free reign to do these things. So yes, you know, when you have that justification, then you're allowed to do these things. I mean, like you said,
did he find out that he was like 23% Muslim also?
No,
that was a joke, and I know that that's not
that
a
would be that I know, but that is pretty funny. Yeah, isn't that what always happens to those KKK guys who are very adamant about it? They go take those tests, and then finds out that they have black heritage. And then they try to explain it away. I think I've seen a Jerry Springer episode about that at least once.
Oh, that would be funny.
Well, I've definitely seen it.
I'm sure that most of them who take that test are grossly disappointed because there isn't much of a purebred human being out there.
Yeah.
We're all mutts. We like to inbreed us humans.
We're all mutts. Deal with it, folks. We'll be back after this trip to the market. Worms.
Listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Meow. Warning.
Warning. Yes.
This is not a drill.
Yes, and we're back. And we're going to switch gears from our, you know, light and light banter in the first segment. And there's a story that this is actually probably going to get discussed tomorrow night with Daryl and Michael because, well, Daryl was actually there for the story that we're going to talk about. But, hey, you don't come on Sunday nights, Daryl, so, you know. We get first choice of the stories for the week.
Uh-huh. Breaking news.
Yes. So apparently, was it early this morning?
I think it was yesterday.
Yesterday, maybe. Yesterday morning. I think around like 8 o'clock yesterday morning, somewhere around there. I think that was Hawaii time, too. Out in Hawaii, a whole bunch of people got one heck of a scare. When I think it was a reporter that was most Android users, no iPhone users got this, but there was an alert sent out through the Android system to all these users in Hawaii with a warning that a ballistic missile attack was incoming and that they were to seek shelter immediately and that this was not a drill. Now, that's scary enough. But it took them 38 minutes and change to respond and correct their mistake because that's the claim is that the claim is that somebody pushed a wrong button essentially and accidentally sent out that alert. But it took 38 minutes or more for them to respond to this. And because of this, one of the stories we have from this event is from one of the sites I used to travel a lot back in my conservative days, the Gateway Pundit, kind of a right wing. Kind of right wing, kind of conspiratorial website. You know, they didn't always have horrible stuff. But anyway, but this one, it has videos included of people putting their kids down storm drains because they were convinced that, you know, they got these warnings that said this is not a drill. And like, you're sitting there and you have like, it's one thing, you know, I think we talked about this recently on a show about the amber warnings and the silver warnings and all that stuff that are automatically sent to your phone in a lot of cases, unless you manage to turn that feature off. But a lot of the newer phones started coming of that, like as a default. But if you're sitting there and like you wake up in the morning, the first thing you see is this alert that tells you there's a ballistic missile attack incoming. Like, you know, and this is supposed to come from like the government. So it was like the local, I guess the Hawaiian government, actually somebody there had a, you know, slipped with their finger allegedly, but you know, that's what you wake up to. What are you going to do? Like, you think you have minutes to live.
Yeah.
Unless you can get to shelter.
I heard a lot of people were freaking out over that. And yes, like, this video shows that some people were putting their kids down the storm drains and other people were just going nuts. I can imagine what would I do in that situation.
I'd go and chill in the basement, I guess. Well, I mean, after this happened, I'd be like, you know, cry wolf situation. I'd be like, is it really happening? So now, like, if a ballistic missile is actually coming, people are just going to be chilling.
Well,
like,
yeah, that's
just a drill.
That's why these, you know, quote unquote honest mistakes are actually doubly bad, because not only did it scare the heck out of a lot of people in the present, and you know, I'm sure there was injuries from people running around, or like, you know, a car. You know, I'm sure there was a rise in, and you know, if you look back, we'll see that there was like a rise in traffic accidents for that day and all that stuff because everybody's freaking out.
Probably heroin habits were formed because the world was ending.
There you go. A whole bunch of people may have found religion on the converse of that, you know.
Exactly.
But on top of that, not only do you have like what happens in the present, but then you have the longer effects down the road, like you're talking about. Like, we're kind of joking about it, but yeah, like a lot of people may not take it seriously the next time if it does happen. And then, you know, now the government's effectively killed those people too. You know, because they're responsible, because it was their screw up in the first place that caused people to distrust this system that's supposed to be in place to warn them about imminent danger. So,
I don't know if I buy the excuse that they gave. Someone pushed a wrong button during a shift change.
Because there would have had to be a pre-planned message with it already ready saying that. Like, for that message to be sent out, somebody had to type that for it to be that specific, say, this is not a drill.
Unless some idiot made a hotkey like L.
That's what I'm saying. Like, did they have like
a macro or something?
That's what I'm saying. Did they have a macro or a script or something that just is ready to go?
Well, you would think if you would think about it, they would probably have to. It would actually make sense to have something like that. But you don't think you would think it wouldn't be something that could be so easily triggered by somebody just hitting the wrong button. You know?
Yeah, you think they'd have two keys, one dude on the one side of the room, other dude on the other side of the room, like they do in the movies, and like, you know, red lights spinning around and stuff. That's what I'm thinking it
Freedom
should look
Fiends
like.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
So we're back, and we were talking about the alleged accidental warning that was sent out yesterday to a whole bunch of people in Hawaii and gave them one heck of a scare. And I know, Shane, you had a point you wanted to bring up. Quickly, I just wanted to say, again, I know Daryl and Michael will probably talk about this tomorrow. And sorry we stole some of your thunder, Daryl. But I think the one thing that he said was, it was pretty funny. He was just like, he got the warning and his immediate response was like, huh? Let me go see what's going on in the crypto world. And went to his computer and started the exchanges and stuff. Because he said his first response to pretty much anything these days is, how's it going to affect the markets?
Yeah, exactly.
So
the markets would be able to respond that quickly.
I know, but it was just that it was just pretty funny. So
they did leave them hanging for almost 40 minutes, and that's what makes me wonder if it was actually an accident or if this could have been some sort of social engineering experiment to see what the Hawaiians would do, like how the public would react on a mass scale. Because, you know, we saw as the video we talked about in the last segment, people were, you know, putting their kids down in the storm drains and all kinds of stuff like that. So I wonder, you know, if the government perhaps was like, well, let's see what they'll do. Let's not let them know this is a false alarm. Let's give them a half hour to, you know, to freak out about it.
Yeah.
They do stuff like that all the time. I mean, drills, I mean, that's a commonplace thing, even though, you know, the whole crisis actors thing has become a meme or whatever. I mean, they definitely have drills for these things all the time.
Oh, no, that's one of those things that, you know, people could say conspiracy theory, but no, that's like actually been proven fact. Like, it just coincidentally, after a lot of these events, they're actually, like, the government has admitted, yes, they were there doing some kind of drill, like, right beforehand or whatever. So, you're absolutely right. Those things do legitimately happen. You can call it a conspiracy all you want, but, like, no, the government's, although there's plenty of things the government's actually admitted to that plenty of people still don't seem to realize that is actually true, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I have heard one alternative explanation, which I haven't been able to pull up any sort of evidence for, but there's one theory that supposedly North Korea did indeed try to launch a missile, but it just didn't make it all the way there. So that's another possibility, but I haven't seen any evidence of that.
Yeah, exactly. I heard that briefly too yesterday and then quickly dismissed it after I couldn't find anything to back it up.
I saw another one from my tinfoil hat peoples that the Illuminati had some nuclear submarine that they actually did try to shoot the missile at, and like you guys said with the Korea story, it did miss, but then they had to cover it up real quick, so then they went and blew up their own submarine. I think the evidence behind this was a 4chan post. So it's really credible stuff there.
Hashtag still more believable than the official story. Anyway.
Yeah.
but no, it is an interesting point. And obviously, we may be all putting on our tinfoil hats a little bit here, but it is an interesting point because, you know, like we've said, the government has actually done these type of things before. The other thing that I had heard talked about, and I again, because of the government's track record, I would not put it past them, that it wasn't necessarily a social experiment, but more so just a fear porn, essentially, put on by the government, as government propaganda, you know, a form of propaganda to convince people to be more willing to accept the, you know, going to war with North Korea or insisting that we have to go to North Korea, that type of thing. So, you know, again, that, you know, there's not a lot of evidence right now for that either, but that's just one of those things that I got tossed around. I heard tossed around too, but both of these, again, even without evidence, you have to, if you give an honest look back at history of the United States government and their actions, just the things that they've actually admitted to, like, just look through the history of things that have been declassified, usually conveniently 25, 30, 50 something years later, when all the people are either long out of office at the very least, or most likely dead and nothing can actually happen to them anymore. But if you just look at the long train of things that have been declassified over the years, that's just the stuff we know about. You know, like, how many, like, including things like the Tuskegee experiments.
Yep.
You know, like stuff like the you know, what is it, the LSD dosing, you know, MK Ultra, like these things we actually know about. Can I'm you imagine on... what they're doing? Oh, sorry, go ahead, John.
Oh, I'm working on an article now that is about in the like 40s or 50s. They blasted pregnant women with radiation to see what the you know, what the effects on the child would be and stuff, just as a test and stuff. The government. Did
I've
that.
Heard. I've heard that story too. You're looking for more evidence. I don't remember if that one was actually like proven or not, but or is that
that one was 100% admitted by them. Yeah.
Okay.
And it was fairly recently that they admitted it. It was 1993 that they finally admitted it, and it happened in the 40s and 50s.
That would make sense. 1993, I was 16 and not giving a care. No, geez. More than that. No, yeah, 16 and not giving a care about what the heck was going on in anything in the world or what information was coming out. So I could see how I would totally not pay attention when that news actually hit. Actually, anywhere in that area between, you know, 92 and 98, probably, I could see myself not caring at all. I mean, heck, I voted for Clinton for the very first time when I voted just because I thought he was cool. Like, that's the extent of my knowledge of what was going on in the world around me.
My first election when I was 18, I voted for Nader.
Yeah, I don't even think I heard of Nader. I think he ran in 96 because, yeah, I didn't vote in 92, yeah. But I voted in 96.
I do remember Nader. However, I think I was a neocon at the time.
I was a useful idiot liberal, but I didn't even care about that. I thought Clinton was cool. Like, I remember, like, because I was one of those people that, like, the president was on Arsenio Hall playing saxophone. That was so cool.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I was like a full-blown commie Satanist.
That's
which is
funny.
Like the total opposite of what I am now.
Yeah, that's funny you mentioned Satanism. I've learned about this recently, but I actually just did a show with Jim Jesus about this, one of the Wolberts, which we did I think it was last week or so, but we talked about this because he's been reading about it, and I asked him some questions about the responses he was getting because I expected it to be like me. I was one of those people for the longest time who didn't understand what Satanism really was. Like, I thought it was the Hollywood version of, like, you know, sacrifices and actually worshiping the devil. I learned that was completely wrong.
Right. Yeah.
It was very, very interesting.
Yeah, it's basically a take on hedonism, you know, or self worship and pleasure worship and all that, which I've gotten away from.
And a lot of parody of the Catholic Church, from what I learned too. Like, apparently, that's what a lot of the rituals were.
I looked into it briefly, and I got a strong sense of individualism from it when I kind of, you know, skimmed through it. I think one of their sayings is something like, do as thou wilt, you know, something like that.
Yeah, they definitely have the individualism minus the non-aggression.
It has some egoism tendencies to it. You know,
because they're okay with you using force if you're stronger than a weaker person.
Yeah, and they follow the might makes right mentality.
Yeah, exactly. That's my issue with it.
so does egoism, which is why
I don't
why
know
I
much about egoism.
I started to learn about it, at least Stirner's version of it.
Mm-hmm. See, I hear so much about him, and I want to check him out.
He's a fascinating guy because he's not what a lot of people portray him as. And if the latest translation of his book, The Ego and Its Own, which now has been retranslated to The Unique and Its Property, because apparently, according to the guy who just retranslated it last year, Wolfie Launstraker, I believe his name is, he said the original translation, which the only translation that people have been reading for well over 100 years now, was done by, I forget the guy's name who wrote it, but he was a Christian anarchist back in the early 1900s, and he was commissioned by Benjamin Tucker, because Tucker wanted this translated into English to go into his collections with everything. And Benjamin Tucker, he was an individualist anarchist? I forget.
Yep, he was.
Yeah, right?
He was
an
like
individualist
one of
anarchist. Yeah, he was one
OGs.
Of the one of the original ones back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and he commissioned this guy to do the translation, And that's the same translation that's been used in every version that's been put out since. And it's a very difficult read. Like, I listened to the audiobook the first time, and another former Fiends host, James Weeks, was the one who turned me on to this originally, because I, you know, because I knew he had read it and was an ego, you know, was big, big into egoism and stuff like that. And I was like, you know, how did you get through this? It's very, even, you know, with the translation, it's still like, it's very jilt, you know, a lot of the sentences are very jilted because the translation's obviously not very smooth. And, you know, it's very, like, I have to read a lot of this stuff over and over and over again. And he's like, no, just go through it once and then go through it again. Don't keep stopping and going over. He's like, you drive yourself nuts. but the new translation was promised to be more, like, you know, there was a lot of things, that there were things that were changed because they took a lot of, obviously, even with the title itself, they took some liberty, you know, the guy originally took some liberties with the words. And there was a lot of words that he translated the same way every time, even though they were used differently in the German translation. So they should have been different words, but he kept using the same word for, like, you know, over and over and over again instead. And also, apparently, according to the guy who wrote the new translation, what the original guy missed, and his thought on why the guy missed it, was specifically because he was a Christian anarchist and probably would not, and as the most of the Christian anarchists at the time were, they wouldn't have been able to pick up on the heavy sarcasm that Stirner allegedly was putting in there. And where people think he's like kind of crazy and kooky, he's actually just making fun of all these different ideologies, almost especially communism. Because while he did hang around with Marx and Engels way back when, in the beginning of Marx and Engels' whole thing, and people think he was a communist and stuff, he actually tore apart communism harder than he tore apart pretty much anything else. But the whole idea about egoism, at least Stirner's version of it, is basically that everything is a spook. They're all just ideas in your head, and people are way too attached to these ideas. But we can talk more about that when we get back. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
And we're back. And when we left, we were talking about spooks. No, not that kind. Can you say that on radio? We were talking about Max Stirner, and I guess it should be mentioned. This has been discussed on the show before. It's been tried to be discussed multiple times, and, you know, unfortunately, coincidentally, as I mentioned, Jim Jesus earlier and James Weeks, their discussion of it on the show actually eventually led to the end of both of them being on the show. because Michael didn't think they covered the, they buried the lead too far. But as I got cut off by the break, I think I get a reprieve and I get to start again. So basically, the whole idea with Stirner and the spooks is that everything, all ideas, all ideologies, religions, all these different things, they really are is just, they're human constructs. Like, we create these ideas in our mind. They don't actually exist in reality, basically. So all of these things to him, he referred to as spooks, you know, just apparitions of the mind, basically. And the idea was that too many people clung to these ideas so tightly that they would lose focus on other things, and they became, you become blinded to your own BS.
I see that, you know, in the anarchist movement a lot, you know.
Sure.
Even oh, yeah.
It's the side that I'm allied with. I see it, you know.
Well, you see it everywhere, you know. You yep. see it, you see it in Democrats and Republicans and, you know, like all this different stuff and all these different, it's like, it is in all these ideologies, especially the more, you know, the more fundamentalist, I guess, that people are in the in these ideologies, the stronger that you'll see that, these patterns in these people, that this happens, that they're very, you know, and they're, those are the ones who are very defensive, you know, they're most of them are, and most of them become reactionaries where you can't even have a conversation with them. Because as soon as they hear or see a certain phrase or word, they get triggered. They just automatically assume they know what you're going to say and they react. You know, I actually dealt with this earlier today because I'm currently involved in a project with a couple of friends of mine. That's a satire site. And we're just getting started off with it. And it's the first time I've actually engaged in one of these things. But we already got our first... somebody took the bait earlier today, and it was quite entertaining to watch. It was an anarchist who was flipping out because they thought they were talking to a boot-licking, a whole bunch of words I can't say on the radio, statist, because of the project we're working on. And it's just so funny.
What is this? Is this a website or?
Not really. I'm not talking about it publicly. The name of it, at least.
This is 007 stuff.
It's kind of secret. Well, it's actually, there's information up on both my Patreon, on the Seeds of Liberty Patreon, and former Fiend Shane Radliff on his Patreon for Liberty Under Attack. There is information if people want to become a Patreon to either of us. I don't know what Shane's deal is, but at the Seeds of Liberty Patreon, it's only $1 a month, and you can get that and everything else. So if you want to go find out what's going on, you know, you can go check that out.
Stop driving down the prices like that, man.
Hey, man. I'm
making my $5 look really rough now.
Listen, hey, you can play. As we were talking about earlier, not only can you continue to make cancer jokes, but you can still play the cancer card. So you have that going for you, brother. I don't. I gotta do what I gotta do. You know,
I'm just messing with you.
I gotta dance a little. I gotta, you know, I gotta give stuff away. But bargain basement prices, hey, so be it. But anyway,
I respect the $1 deal.
But the whole idea of it, of just, you know, getting into that mindset, which is funny because, you know, Shane and the other person that's involved with this, I was kind of like, you know, they're like, how do you do that? And I threw up the commercial that Diana and I cut for Truth Justice, the Truth Justice America Way app. And I'm like, I just have to listen to this a couple times and feel like I need to take a shower. And then I can get in that mindset though where, you know, when me and Diana did that ad, we had to repeat these very, very statist terms, very statist terminology, and be all rah-rah America, which was kind of tough for me. I said for the longest time I felt dirty every time I heard it play on the radio, but you just see that people, even you know, anarchists who are supposedly the logical ones and they figured all this stuff out, they're still, you know, they find a new ideology and they cling to it right away and they become the same type of thing. They have tunnel vision, essentially. And, you know, I got this one guy reacting to me, and I wasn't even like being very outlandish with my stuff, just basically defending the position of a good little status. And he was getting so mad. And I'm like, wow,
how dare you?
Yeah, you know. But, you know, this goes to show you that people react to these things. It's pretty funny.
Purists.
Yeah, but so that's the whole deal with Spooks and Sterner, you know, basically that these things are. And like I said, I kind of dig it. Other than the whole might makes right thing, I still have issues with that. I would never call myself an objectivist, but I don't know. It still doesn't seem like a way to make a very successful world. We'll be back.
My fellow sheep. Election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. and make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CatMuff, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CatMuff, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza, on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. And as always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. To learn more, go to BIPCOT.org. All right, and we're back for the second hour. And I'm Shane, and I'm joined by John and Jeremy.
What's up? Yes, you are. Shane, I'd just like to say it's great to have you back once again. I'll mention that. And also, don't miss a beat, man. You miss a month, and you come back, and you nail both intros. I didn't even have to ask. I was about to say, hey, who's going to do the intro? And you just got right into it. So.
Well, you guys were busy talking during the last break.
Yes.
And yeah, I figured, well, if they don't notice that we're coming back, then I'll go ahead and take over.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, we got too busy talking to Do Talk Radio. One of those conversations. Anyway, so yeah, we are back. And I think we left off with talking about Stirner in the last half. But we'll move on from that, I guess, now. We were too busy talking.
Somebody gets... that gets the boot off share.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm due. I haven't had a fight with Michael in a while. Just kidding. Anyway, but now that we're back, I guess we should pick a story and run with it. And I don't know. Out of all the stories that you sent us, because John sent us a bunch, which conveniently he wrote most of them. I think that. Out of all of them, the one that grabbed my attention the most, well, I mean, the cop ones weren't very pleasant, but, you know, they never really are. But I had heard about this one, and I think we may have talked about it briefly at one show before, but we can get into it even more now, is the one about the ride-sharing services that may be making ambulances more affordable.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yes. So would you mind telling us about this a little bit, since you are the author of this fine piece?
Yeah, so basically the deal is that some economists have looked into it, and they have found, they've basically ran the data of ambulance calls in specific areas, and they've charted the times of those calls and the volume of those calls, and they compared it with the time that Uber came to town, and they saw that the volume of ambulance calls went down when Uber came to town because people were less likely to call ambulances for dumb things that they really didn't need an ambulance for. And I shouldn't say dumb things, because a lot of times people did have legitimate emergencies, but they weren't life-threatening, and they just didn't have a way to get to a hospital. They didn't have a car or whatever, and taxis are extremely unreliable. So this gives people who have... you know, maybe a broken leg or something like that on the side of the road, or maybe people who are in an incident like that, it gives them another option instead of a massive ambulance bill. So, of course, if it's being used less, there's less of a demand, and then the price will go down.
Well, yeah, that's that is one of those things that tend to happen that, you know, most so-called economists don't want to, you know, admit. It's great that we found some that actually would actually look into this and go, hey, look what we found. Although if they're Keynesians of any type, I'm sure they're completely surprised by this fact and acting like it's, you know, they can't believe this. How could this possibly happen? How could this correlation be occurring? It's funny though, because I was going to ask, and then you actually did mention it, you know, the reason why people would be switching to this is the fact that ambulance bills are kind of pricey. And I actually, yeah, I mean, I was going to say, I know this firsthand, because when my kids were really little, you know, they were preemies when they were born, and, you know, they had some issues for the first couple of, you know, first year or so, especially, and there was a couple of trips to the hospital, and I remember, and after one of them, I remember having a conversation with a client of mine who happened to be a firefighter, which, wait a minute, can you trigger yourself? I just said the word firefighter. That's supposed to trigger me, isn't it? I don't know. I just trigger, yeah, a self-triggering. There you go. But yeah, whatchamacallit. And he said, you know, I was mentioning the story to him, and he's like, oh, and you called 911. I'm like, well, you know, my wife did. It was just kind of instinctual. He's like, yeah, don't do that. And I was like, well, what do you mean? He's like, oh, you haven't got the bill yet, have you? I'm like, wait a minute, I get a bill? Like, I wasn't even thinking in those terms. Like, it never clicked with me, of course. And he's like, yeah. He's like, always call us. He's like, call the fire department. He's like, we have the volunteer ambulance. He's like, you know, we'll pick you up for free. And we'll probably get you there faster. He's like, next time we come to your door, just throw a little extra money at us. You know?
And who would have thought years later, they're your worst enemy?
Well, no, not them, though, unfortunately. I know, but even though most of them, unfortunately now in my town, do think that I hate them, I still have no problem with the volunteer fire department in my town. I was still happily giving them money until I ran out of money to give anybody, as I'm, you know, running out of cash here trying to get the heck out of New York. But before that, I happily gave to them every time they came to my door, and I gave a little bit more after the times that we started, you know, the couple times that we did call. And it was the response time from the time that we called called the 911 ambulance versus when we called the volunteer ambulance. I think the volunteer ambulance was there like at least 3 or 4 minutes quicker, and it actually took us to our hospital of choice versus where the ambulance we called 911 said they had to take us.
Wow, that's awesome.
So yeah, I'm a big fan of finding cheaper ways to do that. So yeah, I know how expensive they could be because I can't even remember what it was. I just know it was kind of pricey. The one bill we did get hit for.
My last ride in an ambulance was a couple years ago, but it cost me about $1,500.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Somewhere around somewhere between a grand, 12, 15, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, so that sounds about right. Maybe even more. I don't know. But yeah, it's insane what they charge for these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an industry that could definitely benefit from not just volunteering, but privatization as well. Imagine how much better the service could get, you know, than it is now.
Yeah, and that's kind of what's happening here with, well, to a certain extent, with Uber and Lyft taking advantage of this and companies like that in being able to get people there. I mean, specifically the people without the life-threatening stuff, because the one disadvantage they have, obviously, is that they don't have any medical equipment or staff or medications or anything on board. So, you know, where in certain situations, obviously, you're going to need an ambulance, or you're not going to make it to the hospital. Well, you may make it to the hospital, but you may not actually make it. You know, so... But that is the reason that people that aren't in that position that have, like you said, John, don't have these life-threatening injuries or things that, you know, that's got to be the worst too. If somebody who in most situations would not take an ambulance, but like literally are stuck, you don't have a car, you know, and you live on the other side of town or something, and there's just no way. Like, what are you gonna do? Hop buses? Like you said, Jane, taxis aren't exactly the most reliable. Another big bonus for Uber and Lyft, they use GPS on your phone to track you to exactly where you are versus having to rely on a taxi cab company actually being able to find you. Because you would think, especially in like more in bigger places, you know, like bigger cities and stuff like that, or, you know, even bigger suburban areas like where I live, where the people drive the same routes all the time, you think they wouldn't have a problem. Oh, every time I've taken a taxi around here, I've almost always had to tell the taxi driver how to get to where I'm going. Even with GPS and stuff like that.
You would think that was something they would be using more so by now.
Yeah, well, some of them do. Some of them have their own personal GPS they'll put in the car, but they don't necessarily have a GPS on you like it does with Uber and Lyft, where it's like, you know, they're tracking you to your exact location. So there's no wasted time whatsoever. Versus anything that could happen with any other service.
Incorporated into it?
Well, you just totally buffered there for a second. What was that?
Oh, I was. I said, doesn't Cell 411 also have like a ride sharing functionality now?
Very good point, Shane. Thank you for bringing that up. And I've mentioned before that the Cell 401 ride sharing function on their app, I actually prefer over Lyft and Uber, because as great as Lyft and Uber are and were, well, were is my opinion, and not so much anymore because of things like Cell 401, is the ability to not only get turn by turn directions for if you're the driver, or you know, to get to the person that you're supposed to pick up or whatever, or and also have the GPS so the people can, you know, the driver can find you if you're on the other end. But you can pay in a variety of ways. It's not just limit. I think Uber is only limited to credit cards. You may be able to pay cash. I'm not sure. I've never actually used it because they don't really have too many of them around here. But
they don't take Monero, huh?
No. But with Cell 411, you can pay a Monero if you can work that out with your driver or any other cryptocurrency or gold or silver. Or heck, you can barter a goat with them if they'll take it. Any way you want to pay them, they will. You can work it out. And because with Cell 411, another great thing is it's very decentralized to the point where they don't want to have any idea what you're doing. They just want to hook you up with a driver. They don't get a cut of that. They don't want to. They don't want to store any of your information. Although I think they're still, if they haven't already, I think they are integrating a rating system, or I think there actually is one already. But that'll just get refined over time. And but it's, you know, so much more decentralized. So for people like us, again, huge advantages.
And for those who don't know, Cell 411 is an app that allows you to create custom cells or groups of your friends, neighbors, or family members and alert them whenever you need help. They will receive your exact location and turn-by-turn directions to come and assist you. And it can be anything from a flat tire to a police stop or any of that kind of stuff. You know, you can have cop blockers come and film you. So I really highly recommend Cell 411 because in an emergency, your friends won't shoot your dog.
You would hope not, yeah. Well, they're a lot less like, well, you know, it depends on your friends. But they are a lot less likely to, regardless.
If your friends shoot your dog, you need new friends.
Like, exactly. But, you know, like I said, beggars can't be choosers sometimes, Shane. especially when you've agitated an entire island. But yeah, Cell 401, I've talked about it before, especially linked to me agitating an entire island, because the owner and the creator of Cell 401, the great Virgil Vaduva, maybe say his name, he sent me the panic buttons that they have, which makes it even quicker to be able to send information to your cells. But Cell 401, getcell411.com. Go check it out.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride sharing that allows for payment in any form, crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store, or go to getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.
Maybe it was a decade, man. These years have been really just blurring by.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's funny. Where did I hear that the other day? Was it an episode of Sovereign Tech, maybe? Yeah, I think it was, actually. He was talking about, Brian Sovereign was talking about this whole phenomenon of aging, and, you know, there's this kind of thing where a lot of people say, and I mean, I know too, it just, it feels, as you get older, it feels like time goes quicker.
But I was actually listening to that episode.
Yeah, it's a legitimate thing, though. They're finding out that this is like, I forget exactly the science.
Chunking.
Behind it.
Chunking is what he called it. He said it was.
Thank you.
Basically,
yes.
Like you. As you get older, since you're more used to the things you see, you categorize everything, and it's called chunking, and it takes your brain less time to process everything that's going on, so it feels like things are going faster, I think.
Yes.
Was the general gist.
That sounds about right. Thank you. I wasn't going to be able to explain that as well as you did. So it's a good thing you listened to that.
I just heard that earlier today. I just listened to
it like a day or two ago because I'm finally catching up on all my episodes. I've fallen way behind on my podcast. But yeah, it's funny. Like I said, I was thinking that as we were coming in. Anyway. But we did have another story, actually, we were going to talk about. And again, this comes courtesy of John. So he's provided. I love when John shows up on Sunday with all these stories. And it's just like, oh, we don't have to do much other work. John wrote a bunch of stuff. We could talk about all this all night. But this is actually a very interesting one because this comes on the heels of the state of California finally legalizing. I hate that word. Legalizing cannabis. For recreational use, which hasn't that actually happened like multiple times out there, and they've actually reversed the people's decision over the years, I think.
Yeah,
right?
I believe as early as the 90s.
Confused.
Yeah, exactly. I think mid-90s, I want to say, during Jerry Brown's first tenure, because he's been governor twice, I believe. Like, I think there was like a decade of time in between him not being governor. I want to say, I think he was, I think he's one of those people that went away from politics and came back. But anyway, they finally legalized it. But unfortunately, despite this, the Coachella Festival which happens every year. I can't remember where in California, but out there every year, music.
Indio art. Valley.
Thank you. Yeah, it was like a music/art type festival, right? It's not just music.
Yeah, I went there a couple of years ago, and it was terrible, man. It was so hard to find drugs. It was a bunch of puppies.
That's a bad festival right off the bat, yeah.
Well, I mean, here on the East Coast, I mean, it's like an open-air market. People shouting out the prices and what they want out at the hippie festival. And there, I mean, there was none of that.
Yeah, well, that's a shame. From what I've heard, I've never made it out there for the festival. But from what I've heard from people who went, it was like that was one of those things. Like the first couple of years, it was amazing, and then it just got progressively worse after that. But
it's
but anyway,
college frat kids.
Yeah, but plenty of people still go. And so anyway, with it coming up this year, a bunch of prospective attendees were wondering, well, hey, now that it's, now that recreational cannabis is finally legalized here, we're going to be able to smoke it at Coachella, right? And I think it was on Twitter, I guess they responded, right, John? That they said,
it's
no,
actually
unfortunately.
On the FAQ section of their website.
Oh, even worse.
It literally started out the sentence on, hey, can I smoke marijuana at the festival? It said, sorry, bro. That was their official statement. Sorry, bro. Even though it's legal in the state, it's still against our policy, like, because we have this anti-drug policy.
Yeah, which is kind of obviously a bummer. For fans that were actually going to go there. But this does actually bring up an interesting conundrum, because when I first read this, my initial thought was, well, okay, yeah, private property rights. I still kind of have a thing for that. That goes back to our conversation in the last hour about Stirner and Spooks and my evolution in the fact where I can't go all the way is still I still cling to some of these spooks like property rights, because I still think they make the most sense. For a peaceful society that, you can't really, even if there is, laws, yeah, a private property owner could still make their own rules. I'm fine with that. So that my mind started to go there, and then I kept reading, and then I came to the part about the connections, shall we say, I guess, the people, the promoters and the people who run the Coachella Festival have with the alcohol industry, was it, John?
It was a whole bunch of different industries. The alcohol industry is definitely one of them. And basically, the guy that runs it is big involved in political lobbying.
Including anti including anti-cannabis bills, right? Trying to keep cannabis banned, I believe. I thought I saw it there, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, but we'll have to talk more about this when we get back from the break. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Biptunia, music for the drive to Alpha Centauri. Biptunia's influences are Gary Numan, Brian Eno, Pink Floyd, David Bowie, Led Zeppelin, Grateful Dead, Frank Zappa, Robert Fripp, Blondie, Kraftwerk, and Dead Kennedys. Biptunia styles are trip-hop, rock, pop, glam, industrial, ambient, jazz, and space. Plus, it's got cats and is covered by the BIPCOT NoGov license. You can download Biptunia's music free. Go to biptunia.com. That's B-I-P-T-U-N-I-A. Bravo, India, Papa, Tango, Uniform, November, India, Alpha. Biptunia.com.
Left off, we were talking about drugs, man, drugs. We were talking about the Coachella Festival out in California refusing to lift their personal ban, or at least what they claim is their personal ban on cannabis in their festival, despite the state of California finally conceding and allowing the people there to have recreational cannabis without being harassed by the bludgies, as I like to call them. But the one thing we mentioned that was the interesting among the other connections that they, the person who runs the whole, or at least is in control of the whole thing, I guess, and a lot of their sponsorship, is it all seems to be tied to the alcohol, either directly to the alcohol industry, or in the case of the person who runs this whole deal, actually actively working to have working on, create and or get legislation passed that was anti-cannabis, trying to get bills struck down in areas when they were up, like when it was up in California. He spent a lot of money lobbying to try to have it banned, which, some people do that from a, on some kind of moral crusade. They believe drugs are bad and they're horrible for people. But this guy, since he also seems to have a lot of connections with people in the alcohol industry, it seems a lot more likely that he would be spending that type of money on lobbying efforts because he's trying to help the people in that industry that he's friends with, because that's something that happens a lot. Just like, because the two biggest lobbyists, or at least lobbying, or the lobbying totals, like money wise, from and support against the so-called war on drug, or from stopping the war on drugs, rather, is the prison guards unions and the alcohol industry. Because even
they
though
have so much to gain from keeping them out of business.
And so much to lose by not. Because despite the fact that the American sentiment overall seems to be that most people, at least when all those polls are done, the majority of people, clearly, whether they do get involved in drugs themselves or not, are of the opinion that, at the very least, yes, cannabis should be legal, like federally, that we're talking about, So, like, not only is that sentiment rising, but there's just the mounds and mounds of evidence that just continues to mount that alcohol is so much more dangerous for you than cannabis ever could be. So the fact that these individuals who already have their substance that's on the market and quote unquote legal, even though quite deadly in certain amounts, You know, yeah, they don't want to let go of that cash cow because it could be easily overtaken with, you know, if the, I mean, I don't know the exact numbers, but I'm pretty sure if there was a federal, you know, if the federal government finally just, you know, I mean, they will have to eventually because they're always a lagging indicator, you know, once enough states say, you know, kind of give the finger to the government, you know, despite what little Jeffy Sessions, that little evil Keebler looking elf, horrible man, keeps threatening to go and basically invade states that have recreational or medical essentially marijuana and go after them still, because it's against the federal law. But even when they finally have to give up and say, okay, enough states have pretty much told us where we can go stick it, so there's nothing we can do, that just like everything else, they'll finally relent and do it, and then later on they'll rewrite the history to make it look like they were the great heroes, that when we decided to make it legal again, we were the great saviors of everybody, because that's how it always happens.
Just like they ended slavery and they made everybody, you know, love each other with the Civil Rights Act and all that nonsense, yeah. You know, when really in reality
go ahead.
I was just gonna say, it's like go ahead, take it away.
Sorry, I made you lose your train of thought. I was gonna say, or like the, you know, child labor laws too, when very ignorant people like to crow about, well, with, you know, without government, the greedy capitalist would have kept all the kids in the mines and all that stuff. And, you know, people don't actually realize that if you actually look at the history, the reason the government ended up writing those laws, but they had already, kids had already stopped working as much, because through the Industrial Revolution and through more and more, you know, kinds of automation and stuff like that, people were able to work different jobs and not have to send their kids to work, because the reason the kids weren't working in the first place is because the families couldn't survive without the kids also working.
Yeah, and the culture changes a lot of times too, like way before the government does.
Oh yeah, there's plenty of people have said it before. What's the line? Politics is downstream of culture.
That's what it is.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. It is. There's always a shift. Now, I mean, there is, you know, going back to our earlier conversations about, you know, being tinfoil hat type stuff. I mean, there is technically an argument that can be made for like a social engineering, like Shane brought up, where they're still kind of directing things in a certain way. But yeah, overall, just whatever the culture picks up on, they do it. And then eventually the government has to acquiesce and just say, well, we can't do it anymore, which has always been my strongest point for most people, just not following whatever laws they don't want to follow that don't involve them actually, you know, injuring a person and or their property.
Well, that's kind of the thing, is I think that they drag their feet. They know what's right all along, but they drag their feet with it until they can't anymore because so many people object, and then they put themselves in a position to act like the heroes when they let everybody do what they should have been able to do all along.
Exactly. You know, and like I said, that's why I think it's such a powerful case if more people would actually look at it through that lens and say, oh, wow, that is true. As long as, you know, if enough people just say no, they can't do anything about it. And eventually they have to give up. It happens time and time again. People just don't realize it. So like I said, when I first started reading this article earlier, you know, my first reaction was private property. And then immediately I saw the lobbying aspect and everything. I was like, oh, wait a minute. There's definitely more to this story. All right. And now I'm mad.
It is private property, but it's still a story worth talking about, because my money that I would spend on a ticket is my private property too, and I would like to be fully informed about who I'm giving my money to, you know what I mean?
Well, exactly, and that's why I think that it's great that you put this out, and I hope a lot of people read it, because, you know, especially people that are either like set on going or were planning on maybe going or whatever, you know, or thinking about or hearing about it and go, oh, that sounds like a good time, you know, because like you said, it definitely helps to be more informed about this stuff. And you know, I just did a little piece about this I put out a couple of days ago about the whole idea of ostracization. Yeah, there you go. We've talked about it a couple of times in the show. I think Michael was talking about it a month or two ago, and how it kind of backfires a lot of times. But it still seems to be, you know, I'm still kind of a big fan of the idea of moving towards like a reputation-based economy, which this would have to, you know, that kind of builds into that. And yeah, this is one of those things that I think is a legitimate boycott material if you're somebody who actually cares about having the freedom and or anybody having the freedom to use what they want. You know, like I said, if it was just private property, it'd be cut and dry. But because this situation is not, then yeah, if you care about this stuff, I think you should consider that and maybe possibly not go, you know, and force the guy who runs this thing to make a decision whether to continue with the policy that he wants to have and have his numbers dwindle or actually conform to the market demands.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's plenty of other places where people, you know, concert promoters or whatever are allowing people to be a little bit more free, and I think those people deserve their money a lot more than this guy. Yeah. And this speaks to that whole issue of the discrimination thing. I mean, I'm being discriminated against as a smoker, but I want to know so I know where to put my money.
Yeah, exactly. You know, which is funny because that was the other thing too. It's like, I mean, yeah, you as long as you can be informed about these things, then you can make a decision. But the one thing that was mentioned in the article is, you know, specifically about people not just that wanted to use it recreationally, but actually have. Although, I mean, in California, I know it's a joke. Really, you know, for the longest time, it wasn't legal, but everybody was sick. That's the joke. You know, only medical was legal, but it basically everybody had a card. But if you are somebody who actually needs it, you know, for whatever reason, you know, like somebody like yourself, John, who was using it when you were going through all your stuff with cancer and everything, or like any other myriad of reasons it could be used for, you know, then you are like, if that's the only opportunity you have to, I guess, see a certain band or whatever, like, and then you're not able to use the stuff that could literally keep you alive.
Yeah, they're telling you to put it in a lockbox, even if you have a card.
Then you can't come in. Which, again, private property is one thing. But, yeah, I mean, now everything is, quote-unquote, legal in that state. Why would you continue? Because, I mean, I don't see it lasting long. Because, like you said, you know, other venues, even if they don't exist already, I'm pretty sure another festival will pop up shortly once people realize that if these guys don't back down, it'll be like, well, why don't we start another one?
They'll put a weed leaf on the flyer, man.
Well, exactly. It's you know, we keep talking about like market forces and stuff like that. Perfect opportunity here for somebody to swoop in, or multiple somebodies to swoop in and start up, you know, a multiple other festivals that could now rival this. Where, you know, I mean, there's a couple of these, like, what is it? There's Coachella. I don't even know. Does Lollapalooza even still happen anymore? That was a big one for a while. There's a bunch of different festivals throughout the country that have been happening every year for, you know, I guess however many years at this point. And, you know, just like anything else, sometimes it's harder to get into that market if there's already a dominating force that's been there for years.
I know the Big Dub Candy Mountain Festival that books me to speak every year. They tend to that market. Let's just say that.
Well, there you go. I would have never guessed, but now with something like this, this kind of levels the playing field for people. It's like, well, here now we have a definite reason why people would choose us, even if we're the new kid on the block.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
I love the Freedom Fiends, but in this modern busy world, I just don't have time to listen all the way through every episode.
There is a solution. Go to the World Wide Web and log on to digest.freedomfiends.com and subscribe to the Freedom Fiends Digest. Digest.freedomfiends.com has 20-minute best-ofs of each episode.
20-minute best-ofs? Digest.freedomfiends.com sounds great. How much does it cost?
That's the best part. It's free. And if you listen at 1.5 speed, they're only 13 minutes long. Plus, the episodes are only about 15 megs, which is great, because I have a limited data plan.
Wow. I'm at digest.freedomfiends.com right now. It's so simple to use. And anyone who doesn't have 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends is a big old statist.
I agree with you about people who can't find 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends Digest. That's digest.freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends. So we're back for the final segment, Redemption in the Third Act. And as you may have heard as we were headed out to the break, we lost Shane during the last segment, and I didn't even realize it at first. John apparently caught the email that Shane sent. I did not see it in time, but I thought we were out. I forgot that we had the bumper music coming in, and I was like, oh, we lost Shane. So you may have heard that go through. I don't know if it actually went through or not, but anyway, I don't think he's going to be able to make it back. We'll see. But it sounded like he was having some issues that may not correct, but it was good having him back again. So hopefully he'll be back again next Sunday. Anyway, for this last segment, we have another article. Was this another one that you wrote too, John? I know you sent it.
Yeah, this is another one.
Another one of John's articles. We're going to finish out the night. This is something, I think we actually touched on this story a month or so ago, but I don't remember getting into really big detail about it. So we could definitely talk about it some more. And since you wrote it, I'm happy to talk about it. But the title of this one is Bail Block. It says charity helps inmates out of prison through mining cryptocurrency. And yeah, this is a really cool idea that, like I said, I think we mentioned a couple of weeks back, maybe a little longer. But it's the idea of being able to, it's using this app to mine cryptocurrency and get, Monero specifically is what they're mining. And all of it, 100% of it, is going to fund people's bail, people who don't, you know, get hit with these insane amounts of bail for stupid charges, which I've seen before. I watched it happen numerous times while I was in court, while I was getting arraigned. I saw all these people in front of me with these charges that weren't, like, you know, they may have been like repeat offenders for certain things, but it was always like BS stuff. Like when I heard the district attorney read off their charges, it was always more like BS stuff. They were like, well, victimless crime, victimless crime, victimless crime. And they would get hit with these like ridiculous these bails. Like, some people can't pay these things, and then you're kind of like stuck. So I think this is a great
service. And that's most people, you know, who get arrested. It's nonviolent crimes. And yeah, unless you get the rare situation where they let you, you know, they let you go, which luckily happened to me the first time and not the second time, you're going to be stuck in jail for a couple days.
Yeah, exactly.
At the least.
Yeah.
I mean, they have this thing in this country where you're supposed to get a fair and speedy trial because of this whole idea of people being stuck in cages for so long before they see their day in court. But it happens all the time. Sometimes it's a year before somebody gets their day in court. And if you're fighting against the system in some kind of way, they're going to prolong that thing as long as they can. I remember when, my friend and co-author Derek was facing charges from basically an interaction he had with a cop while he was live streaming out at a protest. And they drug that whole thing on for close to a year at least.
Yeah, that was the one up when something happened. He was up at the pipeline up in North Dakota, right?
Was that the one? I think that. No. That was when he got tased.
Different time.
Yeah, this was in Houston one time when something, the cop was going after somebody, and he just looked straight at the cop and was like, I will disarm you. And that's what he was in trouble for saying that.
Oh, he microaggressed against the cop. He hurt the cop's feelings.
Yeah. Oh, man, that reminds me of my wife's uncle was over here for the holidays, and he was telling us this story about how he called a cop a snowflake that came to his house because he yelled some profanity at one of of his neighbors that was an old lady, and the cop came and was like, you shouldn't be using that kind of language. And he says, what are you, one of them snowflakes?
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, I would have loved to see that one.
How did the cop take it?
Well, apparently not, probably a lot better than he would have if it was coming from a little hippie like me.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, I got the pants scared off me by a cop once time when I just called him Aussie fur when I was a young punk kid.
Oh man.
So, yeah.
I'm usually shaking in my boots when I see him, man. So.
I don't blame you. Well, anyway, this has been a fun show. Sorry that Shane couldn't make it to the end with us, but there's always next week. But anyway, so yeah, getting back to the story we were talking about really quickly. So yeah, Mailblock. It's a really great idea. I think people should go check this out. Put it in the show notes.